My computer's
working. Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, people.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a bird, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when life and on the
air. Hi everyone, this is me, it's Fran Lewis. I'm your host on this MJ Network. And I am so pumped and excited. I have two of my favorite people here. We have New York Times author Vincent Zandri, who scares me every time I open up a book and say, oh, my God, am I really reading this? It's so fantastic. And award-winning author Lee Matthew Goldberg of The Desire Card, which also scared me, which is fantastic. And they are here at MJ Network, and we're going to talk about thriller writers as opposed to mystery writers. And hi, guys. Good morning. I am so excited.
Good morning.
And
good morning, friends. I'm so glad you're having us.
Yep, I am.
How are you doing
out
there in LA?
I'm good. I'm awake, so that's a plus. It is 7 o'clock. It's been an awesome trip, and I leave this afternoon, so this is a good way to end it.
Cool.
Well, I'm ready for both of your new ones to add to my pile of 25 that are on my chair. It's going to topple over.
Oh, my gosh. You're a mad lady, friend.
Yeah, you're a machine.
The problem is I get in trouble every day because the minute I see somebody's book that I want, I just put on Facebook, like, why don't I have the book? And I got to stop doing
that.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're going to talk about what is a thriller writer write about as opposed to a mystery writer, because a lot of people don't know the difference.
Yeah. I think a mystery writer, there's a mystery to solve. So the book really revolves around, you know, who did it, how it was done. Where a thriller writer, there can be elements of mystery, but to me it's more of like a page turner. There's more action involved. The suspense is kind of, the tension is higher. What do you think, Vince?
Yeah, I go in like two different modes. When I'm writing a mystery, I think like my mysteries anyway, at least the series, they're like so character driven. You know, like I've had this character, you know, I've been living with him forever, and he's got his own problems and whatever, and then he gets involved in a mystery that's sort of like, you know, it's not, the mystery just sort of unravels, you know, slowly over time.
Yeah.
Whereas a thriller, man, you're right, it's always right in your face, I think. You set it up, and you set up these really nice people, and then you have hell come down on them, you know?
Right, yeah. You just put them in every jam possible that they could potentially get out of or not get out of.
Right. I mean, they both have mysteries, like you said. I mean, there's mystery in both, but you always got to have like a whodunit in the end kind of thing. But then again, thrillers don't necessarily need a whodunit because you know who's doing it. You know, and you just got to kill them or whatever. You know?
Right. The mob boss is after the guy, and it's just the pursuit. And the book is, you know, will he catch up with them or not?
Right. Exactly.
Considering I read too many of them. And I read everything. Sometimes I read them, and I'm saying that this is supposed to be a thriller. It really isn't. You know, I can tell. And sometimes it could be a mystery. And sometimes it's a mystery, and I'm going, wait, where is the mystery? At which point we got a problem. So which thriller writers stand out, and what are the characteristics of the writing that makes them so first-rate, so that if you wanted to pick up a book by someone, who would you want to read? What are the components that this person is great? Because I don't know.
I mean, for me, my tastes are all over the place, and I don't only read thrillers. So I like thrillers that have some type of kind of like literary angle to them where the book is saying something more. I just finished, and it's an older book, but Megan Abbott's Dare Me, which now is a show on USA. And to me, it was the perfect thriller. A, it was short. you know, sometimes a book that's like pushing 500 pages is hard to get into. So it was short and it was just beautifully written, and the twists came, you know, all over the place. Like I didn't see them coming. So that's what I sort of aspire to with my own work as well.
You know what I'm thinking of? Lee, you got to help me. The guy, the independent writer who wrote the Wolf.
Wall?
No, I forget. It's just W-O-O-L. Anyway, that was one of the last thrillers I've read, and I thought it was terrific.
Oh, Wolf. Hugh Howey.
Yeah, and it was
a great dystopian. He has a crazy story because that was fully self-published, and then it just took off on another level. And now, he's one of the most sought-after writers in the business. Wool is really good. It's kind of apocalyptic a little bit. It has that feel to it. But again, same thing. You don't see the twist coming. The other book I read not too long ago that I just devoured was The Chain. Did you read that, Vince?
No, not yet.
Adrian McKinsey. That blew me away. Like, I remember it was a nice day out. I took it to a park, and then I was like 300 pages in. Like, it just moved. It's about kidnapping, a scandal, and just intense. And a writer who really broke out this year, I think, in the U.S. With that book.
Yeah,
I hear
it's supposed to be terrific.
Yeah, I highly recommend.
Actually, right now I'm reading Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. I've never actually read it.
Oh, that's amazing.
Now I'm finally getting into it.
Had you never read it before, or you're reading it again?
I've never read it before. I've never read it.
Really?
Yeah.
Seen the movie?
Yeah, I've seen all of them. You know, they sort of made it several times in a way. But yeah, I've seen the movie that was 20 years ago.
That's one where the movie and the book are good.
Do you ever find that when you're reading them, sometimes the thrillers or the mysteries, that they're too long, that they drag out the plot, and that you want to say, why don't you get to the point? I've got one that's 700 pages. I won't tell you who wrote them, and the book wound up on my doorstep yesterday, and go like, oh God, why me again? And I know he's a great writer.
Yeah.
But every time I read his books, I go, do I have to read this whole book? Do I really have to? Do I want to read it? Not really. And it was just sent. It's a New York Times author, and I'm going like, help. And the font is too long. So do you ever find that they're too long and they're just dragging it out? 600 pages is too long for a book. 800 is worse.
600, I mean, I think especially for a thriller where, like, the point of it is keeping the suspense and the tension heightened for the whole time. And to be able to do that for 700 pages, if it could be done amazingly, great. But I feel like a lot of thriller books like that could probably be told shorter, where that to me is more like a sci-fi book or like a very smart literary book. Maybe it could be, you know, 700 pages. But those kind of books sometimes would sit on my shelf before I actually would get to them, unfortunately, except for like a Stephen King. Like Stephen King, 700 pages. A lot of times I'm like, and it just goes because he's so great, you know.
Right. That's why I like Don Winslow. He taught me a lot. I mean, just those short, sharp chapters. I mean, and I try to do that with my books, keep them short, you know, chapters, short and sharp, you know, and just so that it sounds like potato chips, you know what I mean? And Brett Battles does that a lot, too. Like, Brett Battles will have a chapter that's, like, 2 words.
I have to read him. I haven't read him yet.
He's a very good guy. Very talented writer. He's out in LA.
But, yeah, I think this is what you were saying. You know, when you have these sort of short bursts of chapters, you know, as a reader myself, I never like to kind of finish, put the book down in the middle of a chapter. So when you have these short ones, you're like, oh, I'll read another, and then you're 200 pages in. Where in a thriller book, if you have these, like, kind of 50-page chapters, it doesn't work with kind of the heightened chase aspect almost that you want for it.
That is true. And then some
really long chapters is almost old-fashioned now. People just don't have the attention span anymore. And there's so many things.
Absolutely. Right. You know, the fact that they're actually reading that book, it's like, let's keep them reading that book as
right.
you know, as much as they can.
Yep.
So what happens when there are too many plots, too many subplots and too many storylines? Because as I say, I read too many things. And I just finished
yeah.
a couple that I was like, I have to write a review of this book, and I'm going, oh, my God, I have to figure out. Then I take my graphic organizer out from when I was teaching, and I'm going like, okay, this is this, and that. And then I'll read one of your books, and I'm going like, this is so much easier. I can get this. There's no problem. And I just finished like five this week, and I'm saying that there's too many plots. What happens when they write too much? And then the reader looks like, why am I reading this, and which plot am I reading? And I hate when they start with Mary's plot and Tom's plot, and this, I hate that. Sorry.
Sounds like sort of a failed attempt, you know?
Yeah.
Trying to write a focused plot.
I also always find with books where there is like three or four plots going on, and maybe you're seeing it through
yeah.
different characters, that I'm always more invested in one over the other. And that one plot,
always.
I'm like, yeah, like, oh, it's Mary again. Like, great, you know, like her plot. Well,
yeah.
unless it's done really well and then it all wraps up. Like, I just saw the other day the movie The Gentleman, the Guy Ritchie film, and it was kind of what we're talking. It was pretty good. It was, I mean, when he's at his best, I think he's great, you know, like a Snatch kind of level.
Right.
But it had a lot of plots. There were a lot of characters. And to his credit, they all wrapped up and kind of, you know, found their place at the end, where I didn't quite know where they were, if that was going to happen throughout.
Right.
But a lot of times, it's like you have all these balls in the air, and, you know, you have to make sure you dunk them all.
Yeah. I don't know. I try to keep it simple, because I'm a simple person.
Mm-hmm. yeah.
Almost always.
No, that's,
almost that, always
that's good advice.
Person present. Yeah, you know, and just... I, you know, Fran, I've told you this before, and Lee, I'm sure I've told you this too, but if I'm not entertaining myself, then, like, forget it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
And
yeah.
the easiest
I mean,
way
that's
for me
the
to
best advice.
Right.
That's
the
best advice
for
any writer out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah, if you're bored, the reader
is
going to be bored.
When I get one of Vince's books or your book, the problem is that I have, no, I'm seriously, I have 25 books on my chair, and then I'll go, okay, wait,
mm-hmm.
Vincent Sandry sent that, okay, I'll move them to the top of the list because now I won't be bored. And
yeah,
I never know,
I mean,
and I never know what you're going to write about. So how do you decide the plot? Because your plots are all different. I never know what to expect. And then the endings, I go like, what?
So you're talking to me? I mean, well,
yeah.
It just sort of comes. I mean, it's like Tom Petty once said. He's like, I don't know. I'm like a conduit. Like, I don't even know where it comes from. It comes in. You know, I mean, I'm supposed to be building buildings. I'm supposed to be a construction worker. I don't know how I even got into writing. So, you know, really, when it comes down to it, but it just comes to me. It comes. You know, like something can happen during my normal day. That'll trigger something. Like, for instance,
yeah.
about 2 months ago, my girlfriend and I were in the supermarket, and I ran into somebody with my shopping cart, you know, and it was like, ha, ha, ha. But then I was like, what if this guy's sort of a nutcase, and, like, he follows me outside, and he's like, you didn't apologize.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like one of those
yeah.
kind of things. And it just leads to one thing, leads to another, leads to another, leads to that's how I'll get fought.
You're always on the lookout for a thriller, basically, related to your own life.
Exactly.
Well, I just go to the cemetery and look at the people there and say who did something wrong, and then I write about them. And then I kill them
okay.
off.
Okay.
Yes, you do.
It makes
me happy. So, what do you write articles about these people? Who writes articles about thriller writers, and which thriller writers would you say people mostly write about?
Oh, Lord. I think everybody writes about Stephen King, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I was just about to say. I mean,
the big one.
Yeah, that's sort of the aspiration. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of times, like, this is sort of the publishing industry in general. Like,
mm-hmm.
certain books just get anointed. It's like they just pluck out.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about Stephen King because he's been a master at it for so long. But
right.
somebody who has, like, a book or two under their belt, you know, what makes that book over – an another book that the same publisher is publishing, the one that they're picking to throw all the publicity behind. And really, that's everything these days. So, like, you know, is your book the one that's getting anointed? Is the marketing team a fan of it? Is your editor a big cheerleader of it in-house?
Just like all
these sort of different aspects are really what make a book successful beyond just being a great book. I mean, I'm still looking for that lightning in the bolt kind of moment. It hasn't quite happened for me yet. Where it really just takes off on another level and like people are reading, you know, that I think, it's few and far between. It's your book getting just picked, basically.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, to be honest, like, I've been there, like, several times, and then, like, maybe the next one doesn't do as well. In a way, like, I wrote yesterday, like, this, I'm entering into my fourth decade of doing this, even though it's only
That's amazing, by the way. Congratulations.
I started at like 30 in the late 90s, and then there was the 2000s, and now it's like 2020. But it's like I've had like amazing highs where like you're literally the talk of New York, and I've had amazing lows even after where I couldn't pay my bills. You know? And then like eventually you build up a library or a back catalog that you're like, well, you know, I'm making a nice living, and it's like, you know, the highs really were never that high in the end, and the lows were actually never that low. You know, you sort of take the average of it, but, you know, but I think, like, actually there's, like, a whole new crop of writers coming up now. Like, you know, that's what happens when you get into your 50s. You start seeing this, and, like, Lee, you're part of that new
Cool. I like it.
Like you, Rob Parra, and all those
guys.
Like,
that was a great book. The Warehouse was awesome. If people haven't read that,
sure.
That's amazing.
What's that?
Let me shut this. So, how do you vary from writer to writer? For example, I read James Patterson. Once in a while, they'll send me something. Then I wonder, like, did he really write that? Then I'll say they advertise whatever. They're all different, and there's no rhyme or reason. Very rarely does he pick the same, you know, villain or the same main character. He's got three, Mike Bennett, Alex Cross, and the Murder Club, and then they're all different.
Right.
And I can't say that everything. I don't know if I would call him a thriller writer, more like a horror sometimes that he writes. Seriously.
Yeah, he didn't write.
So I don't know.
I haven't read him in a while. I haven't really read him since the early Alex Cross books. I met him at VoucherCon, the last VoucherCon, and he was lovely to talk to for about 20 minutes.
Yeah, he's
a nice guy.
Yeah.
Really not. Yeah, I mean, we talked about baseball and, like, all these people were trying. It was actually funny because there was, like, some people trying to pitch him, like, their novel. And I was like, he doesn't want to hear that, you know. He just wanted to drink a glass of wine and hang out, and, like, the World Series was on. And so I was talking baseball with him, and he literally put his hand in, like, somebody's face. And he was like, I'm talking baseball right now. Like, leave me alone. Yeah. And I don't know. It was kind of just the coolest thing. But yeah, I mean, he's a machine, and he's a publishing empire. So he farms it out basically with a lot of the books and writes them with other people, and probably comes up with the plot, you know, and then helps them kind of work through, you know, moments that, you know, throughout. But yeah, I mean, I think nobody in the business is bigger than him right now.
Yeah, he's major.
He doesn't come to the Thriller Fest. He doesn't come to these things ever.
He came to BoucherCon because he was whatever it's called, like the Toastmaster or the honoree. That's the only one I'd ever seen him at.
So if you were to tell a brand new writer how to get started to create a thriller, What would you tell them? How do you know how to get started to write something like that?
Oh boy. Leave you go first, Dennison, because I have no idea.
Okay, sure. I mean, Vince, you said something before, you're like a conduit. I'm kind of the same.
Right.
It's like ideas just come to me, and then when I write, I like leave my body a lot of times, so I go somewhere else, and then I spiral back down like 4 hours later, and I'm like, you know, holy F, I just wrote 10 pages. And I sometimes don't even remember what those pages were. I'll have to like read back and be like, okay. It's like a poltergeist just kind of takes over and does it. I think for new writers, it's like, you know, we were talking about, you know, the basic setup of a thriller. Your character gets in a jam and they have to get out of that jam. That's sort of as easy as it gets. So for, you know, a new writer, what is the most interesting jam that you could put your, you know, hero or heroine through? And then how can they get out of it? And then you're just making sure chapter after chapter that you're not just spinning the wheels, that you're moving that story forward. But I will also say it's not easy. So, like, writing's not for everybody. And if it doesn't come naturally, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's not for you.
If you want to tell them, you know, read as many of the great thrillers as you can.
Definitely.
Study how it's set up and that whole bit. And read writers that you like, you know, don't bore yourself with something you don't like. But it's funny, Lee, you must get this all the time. I know I do too, a YouTube friend. Like, people come up to me all the time, like, I got a great thriller. I got a great thriller.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
And it
usually the plot always sucks. You know, I'm like, and they're like, dude, you can take that idea if you want. You know, like,
and I'm like, I'm good. I'm good. You keep it. Keep it. Don't worry about it. But then every once in a while, somebody will tell you a plot, and you're like, okay, like, that's something that could be worked with, you know, like, you know, little changes here and there, and you have something. Because what do they say? There's really, like, six ideas for stories or something like that, and then it's just variations of it. You know, it's all the same story being told in a lot of different ways, basically.
Right.
Especially how many years now that we've been writing novels as a society.
Right. Oh, my God. I had a dentist. No, I had a dentist who was doing a root canal about 15 years ago. And he's like, you know, probably so busy here, I'd be writing novels too. And I was like, oh, I bet you would be.
Yeah.
And anyway, he was like, I always wanted to write a novel called Scream Catcher. I was like, wow, that's pretty fucking good, you know. And he had no book idea. He just liked the title. So I wrote a novel called Scream Catcher that Paulus owns right now. And he was like, you son of a bitch. I'm like, title is fair game. You know, you can do it. And he's like, he was.
Nobody owns the title. I always try with my own. You know, has this been, like, I'll check on Amazon. Is this out there? Is it actually a title that exists? And titles are fair game.
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't call your book The Shining. Like, you know.
But speaking of that, I'm writing another Marconi novel right now, and I like the title, The Naked and the Damned. And I'm like, and so I looked it up on Amazon, and there was a pulp novel that came out, like, in 1957. Called The Naked and the Damned. And I'm like, screw it, I'm going to use it, you know?
Take that. Yeah. That was so long ago, and no problem.
But like, how many authors have book titles, The Innocent? Baldacci, me, Colin.
Right,
Cole.
I was surprised with my first book, Slow Down, because I assumed that would have just been fake. I mean, it's just, and that there literally was not one other book. I mean, there was like a Slow Down, Eat Healthy kind of book that was out there.
Right.
But that was it. Where to me, like, I thought there would be a billion, honestly, just because it's such a common phrase.
Right. But it's a great title.
Thank you. We're re-releasing it. Yeah.
The main character. How do you decide on so many?
Well, Vince, you're more prolific than me, so you could take that one.
Wait, Prince, say it again.
How do you decide on your main character? How do you pick so many?
Oh, well, like I said before, all my characters come from real life, one way or another. So I never run out. And if I use real people, I even use their names up until a point, and then I'll change them. And in some cases, like of my college friends, like they'll be bad guys, and I leave their names in there.
Really?
For instance, the book I have coming out in September with Oceanview is the bad guy is Paul Mickey Rebuffo, and that's one of my best friends from college. And
that's hilarious.
And he's like, "What are you doing?" And like in the remains, I had this guy Joe Whalen, and he's one of my best friends too. So, anyway, the point is like. I take all my characters from real people, and that way I don't really have to invent them. They're already invented. And I like everything. I use it right down to their hair color, their eye color, where they went to school, like almost the whole shebang. But and that keeps it easy for me. And especially when I meet people who are genuine characters in their own right. For instance, my like local pub, I don't want to get too specific, but there's a couple who come in and they're always loaded. And she's of, I'm just going to say, Eastern European descent. And he's much older and he's a real big guy and they're always boozing it and all that sort of thing. And they're like kind of very prominent New York lobbyists. And I'm like, they're excellent fodder for characters in a book.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of never run out is one of character ideas, I guess, what I'm trying to say.
That's interesting.
So how does...
I'm the opposite. I never use people from my real life. They're all completely made up. Maybe there's like a hair of somebody, but none of them pretty much, very, a little bit and slow down, very little bit, but that's really it. Like, I've really never used real people. Making it up.
You like to make them up. I use real people.
I can make them up.
I get in trouble, too.
Yeah.
Well,
we'll
I make sure they're
too.
Dead first.
Somebody recognizes.
I make sure they're really dead in real life, though, so they can't get me. But,
I mean, that helps.
But what happens,
what happens
when you want to write a story, seriously, about a person in a thriller that's wronged you in real life, and you want to write the story... And you want them in the story, but you don't want them to know that it's them. How do you get around that? I'm
going to
do that. That's why I'm asking.
I just do it. And then I'm like, you know where I am. Come get me.
Yeah.
I do it. And I've done it on several occasions. And in fact, the description of them is so bad sometimes that they will definitely recognize themselves in the book, but they would never admit it.
They're too embarrassed. That's hilarious. I don't think I've ever done that, but now I probably will because I think it's a good idea. I'm going to take that. I'm going to write about somebody that did me wrong.
I'll give you a friend.
I could tell you what to write, and I could tell you who did me wrong, but I can't say it on the air.
Fair.
There was this guy who was a friend of mine, I thought was a friend of mine, who... He was having an affair on his wife, yet he kept his wife, whom I had known since grade school and was friends with, and he kept telling her that he was hanging out at my house. And so she's like, what was going on here?
He was using the alibi.
So I wrote about it in Moonlight Weeks.
That's completely fair game to write about.
Absolutely.
He deserves that.
But there are a lot of people that write about that, There are a lot of people that write about that. I mean, I think I just read some couple of books like that. As a matter of fact, I just finished one like that, where somebody, said, I was really here, but I was really not there, and then he wound up killing everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever.
Oh,
yeah.
Mm.
Those are the ones that put me to sleep after a while. So they're all the same. So do you ever research into history? Like, I just finished, you got to read this, No Stone Unturned by Andrea Kane. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I read it in, you know, it's one of those Fran reads it in an hour and a half books. That was it. And then she talked about Celtic art and all of it. And I figured out who did it. Sorry about that. But do you ever use research into something to write your books? I mean, yours was so interesting, Lee, how I got in trouble finding you. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
The Desire Card. Are you going to write a sequel to that one? Is there more, I hope?
Yeah, so I've written actually the sequel and two more books. It'll be a five-book series in my mind. The second one has a publisher. I'm waiting to hear when the release will be, probably sometime in 2020. It's from one of the minor characters, so the James Dean character in the Desire Card, who works for the organization. It's his story. Mm-hmm. So he decides morally he wants to leave the organization, and kind of like the mob, you just don't leave them. So they pursue him kind of across America. I mean, that one I didn't really have to do that much research for, but I have a separate book coming out in August called The Ancestor, and it's about a man who wakes up in the Alaskan wilderness with amnesia, except for the fact that he believed he was a prospector from the Gold Rush era, and he literally was frozen in time for 120 years. I had to do a lot of research. It was really fun research, but about a third of the book takes place during the Alaskan Gold Rush, which was a fascinating moment of history to research, because where the California Gold Rush wasn't really a dangerous thing for people to do, the Alaskan Gold Rush, you know, where the gold was, to get to it was very, very perilous for a lot of people. And like my character was, you know, might have been trapped in ice for 120 years. It was awesome research to do just about this time, very short time in American history. And there were all these, there was this documentary called Dawson City. Dawson City was like the epicenter of sort of the gold in Alaska for like a couple of years, and then it became a ghost town. So there was amazing archival footage that they made into a documentary. And that was a huge help. I mean, even just anybody who's interested in that time, it was really cool.
I mean, you guys know what I do. I travel to the places that I write about, and, you know, like for the travesty, I went to, you know, Revolutionary Egypt, and I just got back from Chernobyl a couple months ago. And so, like, you know, I just do it on site or whatever. And I just finished another Chase Baker that has to do with the Lost Ark of the Covenant. I figured, you know what, Indiana Jones is like 50 years ago now. I can write about it. And visited the Temple Mount and all that crap. And, you know, so that for me anyway, that's the way I do it, just because I get the touch and the feel of everything. And, you know, I mean, short of actually digging up the Lost Ark of the Covenant, you know, like,
right.
That, you know, at least I'm getting the touch and feel of it all.
I mean, one of my favorite things about being, go ahead, Fran.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say one of my favorite things about being a writer is if I'm interested in something, I get to research it, or I get to visit the location that it takes place in. And it makes writing really like limitless, like anything you're fascinated with. You know, I was very interested in the Gold Rush. It was a part of history. And so the book kind of came out of that, where I was like, how can I bring that into a book? It's something I actually want to spend time researching. I've never been to Japan and I really want to go. So like, I'm going to set a book around there in some form just to give me an excuse to go, basically.
Right. Well, I recall two famous screenwriters who wrote a teleplay about Norman Mailer.
Yes. Right. Who are those guys?
Who are those guys? Actually, friend, Lee and I collaborated on a teleplay, I think it was, about Norman Mailer. It was cool because it took place in the 50s, and it right around his really dark time, and he couldn't write, and so he started the Village Voice, and he ends up trying to track down a murderer. And but all those cool people who were famous writers at the time, like Truman Capote are in it, and
the guy who from the Paris Review.
Yes, George Plimpton.
George Plimpton, thank you.
So
need to kind of get going with that again and try to get it out there. I mean, I feel like
I know. I'm glad we
it's
about
waiting to become a show. Yeah, or a book too.
Absolutely, I'm going to buy two again. See what he says.
Well, we're not going to the Thriller Fest. Which Thriller Fest writers do you feel that most people, when they come to the Thriller Fest, want to see? Who are the people that, because not everybody there really, to me, writes a thriller.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, John
yeah.
Mann writes two kinds of books, and I know he's coming on in May for his Murder of 12 with the Jessica Fletcher series. You have to read it. It's fantastic. And then he hits me with, you know, the Caitlin Strong. But there are some thriller writers that I've never read. Right now I'm reading Crooked River by Douglas Preston and Lincoln Child. That's good God. Yeah, well, how would you like 100 feet to come up on the shore and there's only the foot and not the person? That's all I'm going to say.
Oh,
yeah.
I like that. That's a cool,
it's good. And,
that's
of course,
weird.
It's Pendergrass. And I love Pendergrass because he's totally obnoxious, and he's just so reminds me of me sometimes. So, I mean, which thriller fest writers do most people gravitate to or they want to read? Because I don't read everybody. I only read some.
I'm going to let you take this, Vince, because I've never been to Thriller Fest. So
you should come. So I'm going to be there for one whole day next time.
I mean, I live literally five blocks away from it, so I have no excuse. It's so expensive. It's too much money. I'll put that out there.
True.
Like, there's no reason for it to be that much. This is what I'm going to do this time. I'm going to go, and then I'll have a party on my roof, and anybody who wants to can come up to my roof and have a party there, and we can make our own Thriller Fest.
Right.
I agree with you. Well, I only stay for one night because it's too expensive, but I get invited, so I don't have to pay for the rest. Kim invites me, and John invites me as the press. At least I think I am.
Nice.
And now that I have my brand new shirt that says MJ Network Fran Lewis host, I had it made specially for me. People know who I am. I want people to actually know that I'm here. I don't care.
Yeah.
Personally, I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't care.
Absolutely.
I have to go, sort of, because first of all, they want me to go this year, and second of all, I won the Thriller Award, so I want to, you know, like, I can't be like, all right, I won my Thriller Award, I never have to go back, you know, but this year I'm definitely going to make it, but, like, in terms of, I mean, that's a difficult question. I don't know who I would mostly read who is always at those things. To me, it's always the same people who are at all the conferences, so... I guess Lee Child, maybe, to a degree.
Well, yeah, especially now, since he's retiring the series to his brother, right? Was his brother?
Oh, he is? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Hey, man, you have your finger on the pulse. See, this is the difference between living in Albany and living in New York City. You're in the thick of it.
It's true. I mean, I'm from New York, you know, but it really helps to live there in a lot of ways. Like, there's always readings, and there's always a million things kind of happening in the literary community, and I feel like it's helped me out in terms of, you know, getting my career kind of started. And then here in L.A., it's like the opposite. It's like, you know, the literary is small, but there's so much potential for – you know, adaptations and this and that. But sometimes I'm like, well, what if I moved out here and I just try to kill it in that way? But yeah, I mean, Albany, you know, you just got to come to New York more, dude.
I know. It, actually, like, this is the home of the New York State Writers Institute. Like, you know, I mean, I've had like a 20-year career. Like, you know, like, I run into those people and they're just like, they like keep going because it's like, they're like, for some reason, Albany's like that. You know, they're like, well, I have to be a professor or have another job. And they're like, you know, who does this guy think he is, you know, like, or whatever.
Yeah.
So there's, like, no cohesiveness here. There's no support. There's no nothing. You're totally on your own. Completely on your own.
Yeah.
That's why whenever I do signings or if I read, like, at Noir at the bar, you know, my writer friends are in New York.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think all the publishing houses are here. It really helps to you know, kind of network and be a part of the mix.
Well, I did a show about 2 months ago, no, a month ago, with a whole bunch of people. And the truth of the matter is that we were talking about marketing and promoting and stuff like that. And I find that up here where I am, the libraries and the bookstores don't help local authors. Even though I have a lot of good people that have given me accolades or whatever, they say, well, you don't have a Kirkus review, so I'm not paying them $500 for 350 words. Like, I can pay myself and do a very good review for 100 words for free. You don't have a Publishers Weekly. You don't have whatever. I said, but I have New York Times authors and reputable authors that are telling you that my book is great and it's about Alzheimer's,
right,
my mother's, or whatever. They won't, unless you have that. And yet that's up here. Yet in other places, Marilyn Levinson has no problem on the island. They publish everything. They give the book signings and everything. It's, like, really hard. And when I walked into Barnes & Noble, they said, well, I know you got published by a traditional publisher, but if you don't have returnability, then we're not going to do it. I said, what if I buy the books back from you? What difference does it make? And they just looked at me like,
right,
knuckleheads. It's sad. It's sad. They don't help you.
Barnes & Noble is sort of different than everything. Like, I've never done an event at Barnes & Noble.
You don't want to.
You know, but, yeah, I mean, I there's so many great bookstores that I feel like I would prefer doing that, honestly. I don't know. There's not as many Barnes & Nobles, too, as there used to be, like, even in the city now.
No.
There's only a couple.
No, they closed.
There's so many
independent
bookstores. Like, yeah, I mean, New York, especially in Brooklyn, like, just such amazing ones, and they get such great writers, and they have such cool talks and stuff. I don't know. I think, like...
I signed up at the Mysterious Bookstore, and that's about it.
The real truth, though, is, like, to do brick-and-mortar tours these days, and is it, like, really worth it? You know, it's a lot of money. No. I think if it's, like, your first book and you want that feel of, like, you know, going around and everything. But, like, I did one event besides just, like, reading series for the Desire Card, and the rest was online virtual tours.
Oh,
I just didn't want to spend the money to, like, travel places. You know, where 20 people show up.
I know what you're saying.
I'm making with audiobooks alone. With audio alone, where you can actually just, you go to Facebook, you go to some sort of audio, you know, audio mysteries or something like that, and you can sell like 20 mysteries like in an hour. And, like,
wow,
you know, and the profit margin is not like an ebook or a paperback where you're getting like a couple, $3. The profit margin is like you're getting $10 for products. So, like, for me to actually partake in a brick and mortar tour, it just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense anymore.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, you'd have to have like the star power of like a Patterson or Stephen King, where they're going to line up around the block, you know. Then but I just don't have that kind of star power, you know. And
it's,
you know,
almost like
received...
a nice pat. It's like a nice pat on the back. It's like, you did a good job. You had a book out. Like, you get to do a tour, you know. But mine will be less and less like with books, unless the book takes off on another level. Then I would support it, you know, going around. Or like for my one that takes place in Alaska, I actually want to go do a little tour in Alaska, because I feel like whoever goes there, like, do they ever get writers up there to do, like, events? So I think that would be a cool, fun thing to do.
I'm going with you if you do that.
Yeah, come
along.
Well,
what happens when you get a royalty report? Like, I told Vincent the other day, one of my publishers that wrote Silent Voices is going out of business. So she sent me the royalty report for the first book, first round, the second round. All of a sudden, she sends me one for the third round, and I'm saying, this is not true, because I know how many books were sold. I know that people bought a lot more than $11.78 in royalties. And others are saying, you get 70%. Each royalty report was different. And then she said, you have to sign a report that said that we are no longer working together. Disillusion. I said, I'll sign it when I get all the money. I'm not signing anything, because stupid I'm not.
Right. Yeah.
And
yeah.
she got annoyed, and I said, well, that's too bad. She sent me the digitals or whatever. I just forwarded them to somebody else. Not worried about that. And I'm going to change the name of the book, too, so she can't do anything. But, I mean, what do you do when you want to republish them? Then I received one of my mother's book, and she said, well, we'll republish it for you, but you have to buy 10 ISPN numbers for $300 from Ingram, because this way you can do it. I said, it's going to cost me more again. Then I got the book published for, which was free.
Right.
Not going to happen.
Right.
So I sent it to somebody else,
yeah.
too. What do you do?
Well, how do you know that you're actually
getting what you deserve? Because that's hard.
Right. If you have a contract with somebody, you still need that letter. You got to get the letter that says the rights have been reverted.
Yeah, I did that. I got that. And I'm going to change the name of both of the books, so I'm not going to worry about it. But I know that I'm not signing anything until she actually – I know that there were books bought this month and last month, so I'm going to wait. And I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
So we have about 10 minutes. So how does the writing community help you? Is there any specific author that's a thriller writer that you would want to co-author a book with?
Vince Zandri.
And Lee Hanson Goldberg. I think we just kind of discussed the writing community thing. But
I mean, writers are so supportive. They really are. Like, I've met so many cool people. Yeah, absolutely. Especially in the thriller community, I feel like I'm going to be honest. We're like the cool kids at the table. We're just
especially
fun. We write about crazy things. Like, you know, I've met a lot of great writers in all different genres, but I would say like the thriller writers and going to these conferences and meeting people, like we're just a blast. You know, we kind of don't give a shit. And I feel like that's the difference. We're like in like literary communities, you know, it's different. They're chasing like, you know, the National Book Award and like things like that, and their writing is so meaningful and everything, and you know, that's great. But like, I just want when somebody reads my book to be like, holy shit, I'm sorry, I keep cursing, you know, I went on a ride and I want to go on that ride again.
Right. I mean, case in point, like I'm at BafterCon a few years ago and I hear like, hey, Vince. And I turn around, I'm like, and it's Dwayne Jerzynski, right? And I'm like, I love his books, right? I think he's a noir master, you know, and he's still a young man. And he was just like, oh, dude, how are you? You know, like, but good to see you here. And, like, he didn't have to do that, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
And but I was like, wow, I really love his writing, and it turns out he likes mine, you know? And so that like, you're right, like, especially noir writers and mystery writers, we like to hang out and like we're aware of it. We're aware of each other's characters and all this sort of stuff. Like the last noir bar I did, I think I walk in and Rory Costello's sitting there, and he's like, "When are you going to come out with a new Steve Jobs?" And so I wrote a new Steve Jobs, you know.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, I think also like. There's an element where you're really, like, alone in this career in a lot of ways. You know, okay, maybe you have a publisher, and your publisher's sometimes good and sometimes bad, and you have an agent. And you have these people connected to you, but, like, you're really alone, you know, and nobody else is looking out for you. So I think writers, you know, become the people who kind of support you throughout everything. We've all had – you know, an experience with a publisher that we were not happy with, and, you know, an issue with an agent or something like, I mean, all these sort of extra things that are involved in this career. So a lot of it's sometimes like event fest, you know, it's like, oh, this happened and then this happened. But then it's also like, hey, I read your book and I loved it. And like, you're doing amazing things. And that makes me want to do more amazing things. And I can't think of one person I've met in the thriller community that I haven't liked, really. Yeah. And I don't like a lot of people. I really don't.
Oh, you're so like me. You're so like me. Seriously, Lee.
I like
people
okay, but like.
I know.
Then there's writers like Russell Blake and Scott Nicholson who do awesome work, and they are strictly indie. You never see them. They don't come to conferences. They don't. You don't. Websites are just very plain. It's
mm-hmm.
just you just get the fax name and the website, and they make a killing. They make an absolute killing, but they just keep their. J.R. Rain is another one. I think he did one book with Thomas Emerson and was like, "This sucks." Going
mm-hmm.
back to the way he's
mm-hmm.
doing, you know what I mean?
Like Lee,
I like to be in the mix a little bit, you know. I like having that validation and stuff like that. But there's these other guys, this whole crew, who are just underground. Totally underground. They don't care about fame or anything like that. They just want to put out their product once a month or once every 3 months or whatever it is, and it's really great product.
Mm-hmm, that's it. Yeah.
And they go about their lives totally almost anonymous. You know, I admire them.
No, that's really cool. I want
Ocean,
the fame. So.
Yeah, me too.
Ocean View Publishing. I noticed that Matt Coyle and Dick Belsky, other people. That's how I get in trouble. Because they're constantly promoting everybody's book. And, of course, Vince, if you're with Ocean View, they're going to promote yours, too, everywhere.
Right. Yeah.
I'm finding that a lot of the authors are promoting themselves. But before I forget, next Monday on February 3rd, this is the greatest honor. This is not a book, people. This is a medical show. Dr. Jeffrey Jacobson, one of the most well-known hand surgeons and plastic surgeons in the world, and I know because he operated on my trigger finger and fixed it last month, asked me last week if he could do an hour on Monday on carpal tunnel syndrome and other hand issues that people need to know about. And he's like so pumped and excited, and he asked me, and I go like, you really want to be on my, oh my God. So he's going to be there. On Tuesday, Brian Friedman, Thief River Falls. On the 19th, the author of The Neighborhood. On the 24th, somebody we all know and love, Dick Belsky or Dana Perry, Silent Victim, his new series, his new character. And on the 27th, I've had to cancel these people 5 times for other reasons, Murder in Montague, and there's 3 authors that are coming on to that particular show. And that is just February. I'm taking some time off because my husband's having cataract surgery on Wednesday, and that's no fun.
Good luck to him.
Good luck to me. So,
and to you too.
What is next for everybody, and when am I getting it? Seriously.
All right, Lee, you go first. You got a lot on the fire. Plus, you have your. Lee, tell them about your new publishing company.
Yeah, I was the best.
Yeah, that's what I wanted
so
to ask you too. That's my next question.
Sure. I have a couple books coming. The last one, and then a reissue of Slow Down with All Due Respect. They're publishing it for the 5-year anniversary. But what I'm really excited about is I am starting my own publishing company, and it's called Fringe, and we launch
mm-hmm.
in the summer, likely in July, probably, with a couple titles. And it's not thrillers, you know, it can be, but it's really books outside of the box. So it's books that big presses should be publishing, but they're afraid to for whatever reason, and we're the place for that. And the really cool thing that we're doing is we're partnering with these Hollywood guys that run the Pipeline Media. So all of the books that we publish will get fed through a pipeline to producers, development execs, et cetera. And then in their competition, the winner of their outside-the-box category will be published by us. So it marries these two industries in a way that I haven't really seen enough of. I'm really excited. So look out for Fringe. And we'll be doing a tour for that one, brick and mortar, definitely.
And I hope I'm going to get some of them so I can see what out the box
you'll
means.
I will send you all of them. I would love that.
Oh, goody.
Thank you so much.
And Vince, when am I getting the Extortionist and whatever else is coming out that I don't know about?
I know. First, I got to strike up a 100 grand deal with Lee at Friends. And
you're welcome anytime to publish with us. We don't give advances, but we hopefully pay in the long run.
I'm very, 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 I have, like, besides my independent stuff, I got Deadly as the Night comes out from Down and Out in April. Brandon, you'll get a copy of that. And then The Girl Who Wasn't There comes out in hardcover in September from Ocean View. And we'll start
nice.
Doing some series. I'll have galleys for you. But and they just took on Paradox Lake, too, which was kind of surprising. Because
nice.
I don't Congrats. Have a track. Thanks. I don't have a track record with them yet, but they were like, can we just please get it and don't show anybody else? So I was kind of happy about that. And
that's awesome. That's what you want to hear.
Yeah.
Well, please send me galleys with large print so I could see it. I love large print. But anyway, tell everybody where they can find out more about you and your work. And this is interesting. Let me tell you. This is really interesting.
So for me, LeeMatthewGoldberg.com. For all my stuff. And then for Fringe, it's fringelit.com, Fringe Lit.
Nice. And Vince, where can we find out about your thousands of books?
VincentAndrew.com, VincentAndrew.com.
Okay.
Well, the website's fixed still, but I'm going to work on that.
Well, I want to thank you both. It's beautiful outside. It's I don't know how it is by you, but it's only 39 degrees here. It's freezing. And
in LA, I think it's about 70, so it's pretty nice here.
That's not fair. That's
nice.
Not fair. Seriously.
Yeah, but I'm leaving, so yeah.
Oh, so sad. I'm so sorry for you. But
okay.
What can you expect in New York tomorrow? 41. That's not bad. It's a heat wave.
All right, I'll take it. You know what? It was 20 when I left. I'll take 41. I can
41,
handle it.
41. I have a bad habit. I put my coat away, which is not a good thing. But I want to thank you both.
Yeah.
Everybody have a
right,
great
man.
Day. The sun is
thank
shining,
you.
And I can't wait to read more of your work. Everybody have a great day, and bye.
All right. Bye, Luke.
You too. Thanks. Bye. Bye, Vince.